Try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal.
Protonic reversal with your host, Conan Neutron. Broadcasting from a secret underground lair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A gigantic middle finger to everything that is rock about music, rock and roll, and corporate power.
The thing is, though, if you don't laugh, you're going to go on a killing spree with sharp and nails.
Don't it.
Confidence of a hero or a fool, I wasn't exactly certain which.
Could not be more professional.
It means something.
And they got away.
You know, that's my take on it. Like, what's yours?
Protonic reversal!
That's like a science thing, right?
Indeed it is. It is a science thing. It is a science place. It is a scientific fact. We're all up in your face. It is time once again for the one, the only... Protonic Reversal. Welcome to it. Hey, this is episode 453. I'm fitting a few more of these in before I'm out on tour. I'll be in a mere minute and a half, maybe, talking to Mr. Joanne Dennison of Tomahawk, Jesus Lizard, Dennison Kimball Trio, so many other great things. Very excited to bring him back and talk about all that stuff. Of course, before we do that, welcome to Conan Neutron's Protonic Reversal. I'm your host, Conan Neutron. I'm a rock and roll lifer who has been touring and recording for 26 years, most known for the band Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends. Music is a huge part of my life, and I use the format of this very long-running show to talk about music and art with musicians who I enjoy and respect, but who may not be household names. As mentioned, this is episode 453. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, archives of it are available for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding. ProtonicReversal.com. However, if you want to support the show and get episodes sooner, $1 a month. Patreon.com/ProtonicReversal helps achieve that goal. Keeps the lights on this joint. And if you like the show or even just a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share it around the internet, even leave a review. All that helps people discover the show. It beats back the almighty algorithmic overlords. It's just a darn nice thing to do. So a bit of housekeeping. Secret Friends back on tour in less than 2 weeks. A few shows with Mike Watt. Then out with Red Cross for most of March and April. So if you're in any of the cities we're playing, please come out and check out a show. Come say hi. I'll try to have Protonic Reversal stickers around for that exact occasion. Sometimes I run out of them, so don't at me. But who cares about any of that? Because I got Dwayne Dennison coming up, and Tomahawk is playing shows, which is great news for anybody that likes great music. Please welcome on Mr. Dwayne Dennison. Welcome back, sir.
Hello. Hi, Conan. Hi, everybody.
Really excited that Tomahawk's doing stuff. I think that last record might be your best one.
Thanks. It kind of came and went under the radar. You know, it came up about 5 years ago, and we didn't play any shows. It was kind of post COVID, and people were getting caught up from things that didn't happen, and it just kind of got shuffled away. So we aim to address that, and it's funny. It's almost like we're touring on a new record because
right.
We didn't play any shows, and et cetera, et cetera. So we've got a lot of new material to pick from, which is always good. And we'll be playing some of the old ones too. So come on out.
And I realize, and of course I'm linking to the show notes to all the great tour dates, of course, with the Mighty Melvins. That's going to be a wonderful time.
Oh, yes.
And yeah. I realized the last time I saw you guys, Kevin was still playing. So that was a very long time ago. Let's just charitably say.
Over 20 years ago then.
Yeah, that's like first, second record. Like, that's it. Oh. And I was like, no, that can't be true. And I kind of went over it and I was like, no, I think that's... Because yeah. And I remember why it was like a false memory. Because I think I had tickets to see you play and I didn't go or couldn't go. Something happened. Whatever. Doesn't matter. But, I mean, it's not like Tomahawk stopped necessarily. Because I think that Oddfellows record's great. Like, and that's something that another one that... true heads know and fans know, but I feel like kind of somehow flew under the radar. That's, I mean, it's not under the radar, but it didn't get the attention I feel like that it should have.
See, I feel like I feel that about all of them. Right. I feel about that way about all of them. Especially the first two, I thought were as good, you know, were as good as anything else that came out that year. And it just seems like the first one kind of, it came out on the heels of 9/11.
That's right.
So everyone was freaking out about that. And we actually got, our release date got pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. But we went out and we toured on it. We played a fair number of shows. And then the second one, I forgot what the thing was with the second one, Mitt Gas, which was produced by Joe Barisi, kind of a big deal in LA. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Just we were going up against other people's record at the same day. And it just, and I thought that had some good songs, great songs on it.
Oh, absolutely.
All of them. I feel like, because early on we got tagged as a super group.
Yeah. The double edged sword, right?
Yeah. And we never thought of it that way. We were just, we had met each other through all our other bands, and we said, hey, let's do something someday. When we get a chance, let's do something. So we did. And that's what it was. And when you call something a super group, no one takes you seriously after that.
Right.
There's compositions, songwriting, et cetera. No one really takes it seriously.
Well, and what they're going to do is they're just going to constantly be comparing against previous works in other bands too. And it's never going to be looked at as its own entity, because people are going to get so caught up, like almost the gamification of it, right? You know, and that's the first thing I thought of when I heard Tomahawk. I was like, oh, great. You know, this is, you know, new Dwayne band. John's a obviously monster drummer. I was like, oh, he like,
of course,
super cool, slightly different style than Mac, but like, you know, super interesting drummer. And then with Patton, I adore David Yao, but he's and he, credit where credit's due, when he was like working with Paul and Matt and Quee, he like upped his singing game considerably, right? But Patton is like a singer. Like, he can sing. That guy can do things with his voice that few can. Right?
And we brought the electronics and the samplers and the keyboard things.
Bleepy
too.
Bloopy. The bleepy bloopy complimentary. Yeah.
But I can't claim too much. I mean, those records did really well, especially the first two for totally under the radar. But you know, we toured, we went all over the world several times, and now we're back. So I get to do it again. Yay!
Yeah, which is great. And there was a thing on one of these social media sites. It was like, you know, Tomahawk to go on tour. No new material release though. And it's like, well, but that record, they didn't get to play that record. That record's still new as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the record came out 5 years ago. We never played any of it. No shows.
You've never
seen any of those songs live.
Yeah. What more do you want?
I would say anywhere from a third to half of the set we're going to be playing will be stuff we haven't played live before.
Yeah.
So what do you want?
Yeah, what are you looking for?
Christ. Stop complaining.
So what's a rehearsal process look like for Tama? Because I know for the Lizard, you guys got together in Nashville, right? Is that the same sort of situation?
Same thing.
Yeah.
I have a practice space of my own that I keep, that I share with some other guys. You know, your typical grubby punk rock dungeon.
Right, yeah.
That I share with other guys. And that's fine for doing smaller things. But then when we're getting ready for a tour and that, we go to a bigger place, like a pro rehearsal studio place, and rent a room. So typically what we did with both those bands is some of the guys are going to come here separately beforehand. Like John Stanier is going to be here later this month, and just him and I are going to play together for a couple of days. And then I think Patton's going to be here. He's doing that thing with the Avett brothers, right?
Right. Yeah. That's pretty cool. I did not expect that. I don't think anybody else did either.
Yeah. but he's going to have a couple of days off here. So him and I might get together and work on some stuff.
Right.
And then, so everybody does their homework, and then we're going to get together, I think in July, but before, and have like maybe 3-4 days together
with everyone together,
everybody, everything.
So are you working out like a pool of songs ahead of time? Like, where it's like, it's going to be from these, or do you have it like, no, this is the set. It's pretty much going to be these.
No, we have like there's like a master list of everything, all the potential songs we can play or to be worked on. All of the new ones, all from Tonic and Mobility, all from the last album, and then maybe four or five from each other album. And then that's a lot of songs. So obviously we can't play them all every night. So we might do a similar thing to what the Jesus Lizard did, where you make two, even three different set lists and rotate them.
You can alternate them in. Sure, absolutely.
And that way you can, you know, some of the bangers and some of the more popular newer ones will probably get played every night. But then some of the more peripheral sort of deep cuts, you can kind of rotate through those and throw those in.
Right. You know what they're going to do in that section of the set or what effect it has on the momentum. But you can the grace notes necessarily how you get there.
I don't know what to expect on the reaction on some of these new songs.
Because they haven't been played, right? In front of an audience anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting. That's cool, but it's exciting, but it's kind of, you know, like, oh, wow, that's been a while probably since that.
Yeah, usually, the last Jesus Lizard tour, which will have ended almost a year ago, July maybe, we had an album, and so we had a lot of new songs.
That's true, yeah.
So it's more exciting, it's more challenging to break in new songs. It's the audiences don't necessarily like it better. They want... But I don't know. I tend to think if you're a Mike Patton fan, you probably expect that it's not going to be a, you know, sort of fixed entity every night. You have to expect that with Mike. You know, he's too much mental energy. He's not going to get up there and just rock the same set night after night. He'd be miserable. And I think the rest of us don't want to do that either. So we'll see.
And that's exciting too. And I'm trying to think. Yeah. So I haven't seen you with Trevor, who's great, obviously one of the great like bass players, one of the great musical minds. It's interesting to me that you have such a wide pool of songs to choose from. Was there kind of consensus on like, we should definitely do these, or are there any that kind of, I don't know, maybe not that one.
To be honest, so we had all the new album.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on each of the albums, I basically just picked what I thought were the four biggest ones. And then people can kind of, everyone agreed on that. Everyone's pretty amenable. And then the other guys just kind of said, hey, what about this? What about that? What about that? And I'm sure, add it. Sure, add them in.
And then you have a pool of songs.
Yeah. And you've got, I think we've got probably 25 songs, maybe close to 30 we can pick from.
Nice.
But we're not playing them all.
Yeah. Play them all beginning to end. You'd be like Bruce Springsteen or something, right? With those three-hour shows. It's like, oh, my God. I mean, respect. It's just that there's something to be said for saving a little back, too. And this is, you know, you're out for a good amount of time too. Like this is you're covering a pretty good area. I know there are people that are non-US based that would like to see the band, but the stuff is very fraught right now.
I don't know. Maybe next year. I don't know.
One can hope. I mean, I'm kind of amazed if any band's touring internationally right now with the way things are politically.
The way things are,
it's nightmare.
You don't know what to expect. God, are they even? I can't blame them. Do they even want to see Americans at all?
Who are we bombing now? I don't know.
Who are we alienating now? Who are we turning our back on?
What day is it? You know, what hour are we? Are we the next atrocity? Not to get too political about it, but it is exhausting. You know, and that's a drag too, because I think about that in terms of like the artistic exchange of, you know, bands coming over from Europe or Canada or Japan, and the people just don't feel comfortable doing it. Like, well, I get it. I fully understand why you would not feel comfortable doing that, you know? And it's, that's just a drag. Sorry. But it's also a reality that we're dealing with. So there's no way to get around it.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's been interesting watching battles? Because I was kind of with them since when they very first started the band, when they had those EPs, and they had, you know, they basically gradually moved down to like the current incarnation, which is, you know, just John and Ian, which is amazing. It's amazing like what they're doing. But do you feel like John's playing has changed at all with like his journey on his own between Tomahawk sure. Records?
Yes. It's funny, John, on the one hand, he's been in like Helmet were a bombastic, big, powerful, loud rock band. But at the same time, he's kind of a minimalist. Like he's not all over the set all the time. He's not, he's got monstrous chops. He doesn't always lay them out there on all the time. I don't know. I think because he also likes electronic music and hip hop things and he's comfortable with that. So he's very distinctive. He's become, I think as you get older on any instrument, you become more of a stylist as you age. I think that when you're young, see, now we're going to get into the whole thing as aging as musicians and listeners as people. I think that, especially as an instrumentalist, guitarist, drummer, whatever, when you start off, you're full of energy. You're a ball of energy and fire and this, and you can play all night. You can just gun away. And to a certain extent, you can get away with it. You can get away with that. It's the same with baseball, like a pitcher or something, a fastball, a curveball, a changeup. That's all you need. But as you get older, a couple of things happen. Number one, people, they figure you out. And you're not a surprise anymore. You're kind of, well, you need to come up with some stylistic thing. I keep getting these update things on my computer and I don't want to update. I just want to stay the same.
I just want to use the damn thing.
Exactly. I just want to use it. Yeah.
It's our modern age. This is the future.
Yeah. As you get older, I think, and also as part mentally, so physically you start to wear out, don't you?
Yeah,
I mean, I've got aches and pains everywhere. I do hand exercises and neck and shoulder things, et cetera. So you can't be the ball of fire you once were. But in a way, that's good because you become stylistically more interesting. You let some things go and you acquire new things.
Right.
You've heard more. As a listener, don't you find you kind of accept and understand things that you would have overlooked at a younger age?
Little nuances, things that are so subtle, maybe you'd miss them. Sure. Yeah.
You would have blown it off. Like for me, a lot of it, you know, I listen to a fair amount of orchestral music, chamber music, stuff like that. And in the old days, I only wanted the ultra modern stuff. I only want to hear 20th century composer. It's got to be dissonant. It's got to be polyrhythm. It's got to be this and that.
Pendereker, so, or get out. Yeah.
Yeah. And then as you get older, you start to appreciate different subtleties. Mm-hmm. Right. And things that you would have overlooked, now you appreciate them in a different way. And I think this with most people, like a lot of people, some people, for instance, who only listen to rock, don't you find as they get older, they suddenly start liking country or alternative country.
Yeah.
And why is that? Maybe because you can relate to the lyrics now. Maybe you're mature enough where some of those things are happening to you now and you can relate to it. Some people get into jazz more and improvise more. Why? Maybe your mental energy, you want to be engaged with something that's moving around more and not so traditional. I find that I listen to less rock as I get older for a couple of reasons. I think not because I don't like it. I still like it a lot. I have a hard time finding new things I like. Mm-hmm. Harder time. I don't look for new stuff as much as I used to, and I don't go out as much as I used to. I think you get a certain age. I mean, there was a time I lived in nightclubs. When I wasn't playing them, I was hanging out in them.
Yeah.
And drinking and smoking and doing everything else and checking out other bands. When I wasn't on tour, I'd get home, I'd stay home two nights, and then I'm immediately out. I can't do that anymore.
It loses its luster to a certain degree, right?
There's all other ways to, you know, listen to new things and find new things. I forgot what was my
name. So John, we're talking about John, how he plays now versus back then.
Who cares about him?
John, stay here. Oh, whatever. bring that guy on. Whatever. It's our time.
And also this, I think that, so with rock bands, I think as you get older, this happens too, Conan. Think about this. To me, when you're younger and you really get into a band, when they become your band, when you love everything, it's not just the music, yeah. is it?
No, it's no, not it's a whole thing.
Music. No, yeah. it's the whole thing. You like, you think they look cool. Mm-hmm. You think you could be one of them. I would hang out with them because they would think I'm cool too. Or you think that, right?
Sure.
Or the things they say in interviews. You like their attitude. You like their energy. You like the way they look. You like the things they say. I think as you get older, those things mean less and less. And I think as you get older, you realize that most of it is fake. That this rebellious whatever thing they're putting out isn't even real half the time, or it fades.
Yeah,
it fades out, and then their true self comes out later, and you realize, wow, that guy's kind of a reactionary jerk, or that guy turned out to be this, and like, wow, that's I don't like. How could I have fallen for this? And I think as you get older, you filter those things out. You don't accept it. I think when bands are younger, this is also the good side of it. At least I feel like with myself and with other bands that were the bands, they're no longer young, but they're still working, whether it's Melvins or or whatever. Okay. When bands are young, you can get away with, if you've got a lot of energy and you got the right look, the right attitude, that'll keep you going that'll keep you going for at least 5 years.
People are like, oh, it's great. They're so great. Oh, what's great about them? Oh, no, it's a great show. Okay. Well,
yeah, they're cool. They got a cool vibe.
Yeah.
That goes away. That doesn't last.
Do they have any songs? I mean, I don't know.
Okay, that's my point. that's my point. If you're past a certain age and you're still able to do your thing, you're still putting out albums that there's somewhat of an audience for, some audience for, you're still able to book tours where people show up, then it's about the music at that point. It really is.
It has to be, or it should be anyway.
Yeah. Right. I mean, some people are going out of curiosity. They want to see what you look like now. They want to see how you've held up. They want to, say, well, compared to them, compared to themselves, how
can they still play that lead? Can they still play that solo?
Can you still hit those high notes?
Right. Exactly.
Are they going to be winded after 8 songs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Those things. but it really is about the music. And from a personal standpoint, as a musician who's keeps going, it shows that you do care about the music because, when you're younger, you go on tour. Sure, you want to hang out and you want to socialize and flirt and see where it gets you and get into all that shenanigans.
Sleep? Who needs that? Yeah, exactly.
No, that's amazing time.
And nowadays, it's like sleep. Oh, I need that. Yeah, I need that. Yeah.
And so as you've gotten older, those things aren't really part of the equation anymore.
Sure. Yeah.
Certainly not as much. Let's just say not nearly. So there has to be another reason for yourself for doing that. And it's not just money. It's you want to play music. You want to get in front of people and play. You like working together with other people to put what you feel is something good in the world, I think is important.
Yeah, and I feel like that's something where everybody, I mean, all the Tomahawk guys all seem like they're definitely on the same page for that. I mean, what are you doing if you're not into doing music? Like, why would you even be doing it, right? You'd be like, there's easier ways to make a paycheck.
Exactly.
To be brutal.
Yeah.
And so it's, and the reason why I was leading the question with John is because I think about Helmet, which I love his drumming in Helmet. It was amazing. But then, like, he started doing stuff in battles that was like, huh. That's interesting. I wouldn't have necessarily expected that out of him because I wasn't thinking about him in that way. And then, like, as it got gradually more stripped down, I was like, well, what are they going to, is he going to go more maximal? Like, how are they going to?
They can keep going without him. They should just Ian with a bunch of loops and stuff.
Which blew my mind, but it's Ian.
They should just go with no one.
I guess in 10 years, it's just going to be like a cardboard standee or something of them. Yeah, exactly.
All loops, just let the machines go on their own. Call it battles and then stay home and collect the checks.
Right. But again, I guess I shouldn't be too surprised with that because with Ian Williams, I remember the time I saw Don Caballero, the second guitarist left. And then I was like, oh, what are they going to do? That's going to be crazy. And then it's like, he got 2 looper pedals and he's just freaking looping everything like a maniac.
If you saw late Don Cab, then battles wasn't that big a jump, was it?
Yeah. No, I got it. And also, I bought one of those pedals too. Not that I was playing that kind of thing. But
that's enough about them.
Yeah. But talking about Tomahawk, with John coming in, kind of originally just after Helmet, right? And then, like, okay, you have this, like, especially a break between, like, the second and the third record. But between the third and the fourth, like, all of a sudden the music is happening. You know, Jesus Lizard has, you know, come back and gone and come back again and so on and so on. Everyone's done everything else. I feel strongly that a rock band, in the larger sense of things, Tomahawk being a rock band, is as good as its drummer. And I think you've got a great drummer. But is it different now than when you guys first started playing, like, whatever, 28 years ago, whatever, however long it was? How long ago was that? I'm trying to remember.
25 years ago.
25 years ago, 2001.
2001 was when
the first 9/11, game. Right. Okay, never mind. They said never forget, and I forgot.
No, nothing's changed. Nothing's changed as far as that goes. And I he's one of those kind of guys I talk to regularly, whether we're doing music or not, just to see what's going on. And nothing has changed between us, which, you know.
I love how he had the high symbol, the one that's like really, he has to really want to hit it. It's like really high, you know. You got to really put some effort into
it. That bothers that bothers them, and I think it's funny, right? It's just a thing.
Hilarious. So how do you think about things? Because I always felt like you're a very composer head guitarist as well. Like you come at things from, you know, some people are, they're sound guitarists, right? Or some people are riff guitarists and so on and so on. But I feel like you think about things in terms of the whole composition. You've got a very musical mind. You know, you're almost like putting together like a cool puzzle of some sort.
Thanks. Yes, absolutely. I think about the piece. Obviously, some things are more riff based than others.
Yeah.
Some things might be more structured in terms of thinking about the vocals, verse, choruses, this is, et cetera. But no, you have to try to think about the big picture and think about the different sections as like components of this piece, almost similar to like literary things where maybe the intro isn't just the intro. It's foreshadowing something that's going to happen later, or that secondary part, like this contrasting section that sounds quite different from the main riff you just heard. It's not that if you analyze it, it's the main riff inverted. You know, those little kind of things, right? I do those, a lot of those kind of tricks, and whether people notice them or not, it doesn't matter. But I think deep down, it gives it a nice unity. It gives it a nice coherent kind of continuity that it wouldn't have otherwise. And I had some formal training. You know, I went to college. I studied music in college. There, I said it. Yeah. I'm not sorry.
Take away his punk rock badge.
Yeah. But I would play. I had played in bands and was doing music way before any of that came along. So I don't know. I'm old enough where I was a teenager in the 70s. So at that time, rock music, it was heavy on the prog rock and heavy on the glam rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I was into both. I saw Humble Pie, I saw Bowie, I saw them, but I also saw Yes and Genesis and Gentle Giant and all that. And to me, that level of playing and that level of like excitement and power from that to me was what rock was. And I never forgot that. And so when punk rock came along, for someone like myself, more than anything, it kind of kicked the doors open to me for the world of independent labels. Where in America, more so than in the UK, all those punk rock bands were on major labels, weren't they? They all were, right from the start. The Pistols, Clash, Stranglers, etc.
But what were they, there was no other option, right? There wasn't. Right. They didn't exist.
And in the early in the US, you know, like the Ramones were, the Dead Boys were, all that.
Sure.
But then it turned, the independent label thing started, and where labels could put out music that was not meant for a mass audience, but it wasn't necessarily punk rock. It wasn't strictly punk rock anymore. It was more diverse. Labels could have an identity. But Touch and Go, to me, had a distinct of identity that was different from, say, like SST had an identity, but it was fairly eclectic, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yet a unifying factor is like Spot recorded a lot of those records, right? And it's like, so somehow there was an identifying sound, but that wasn't really intentional.
Or a look. Like, there was kind of a grainy sound and a grainy look for the Pettibone Art.
Mm-hmm.
Touch and Go had kind of a stripped down, hard aesthetic, but was diverse too. I mean, Butthole Surfers, Scratch Acid, et cetera. And so to me, the punk rock, it opened the doors for that. And for someone like myself, I thought, I just said, there's my way in.
Yeah.
That's my way in, is this, those kind of labels. So to me, that's what that's all about.
Well, totally. And that's something where I feel like you can kind of take the best of all those things and kind of put them towards your own entity. Like, I mean, I still remember, like, you know, first time I heard Heart of the Sunrise, I was like, wait, that's Yes? Because I'd only heard like the really tame Yes stuff before. Yeah. And I was like, it's like, this isn't for me. And then I heard Heart of the Sunrise, I was like, whoa, this kills. What are we listening to? And someone was like, Yes. Yeah. I'm like, no, really, what are we listening to?
No, they have some very aggressive dissonant stuff that most people don't know. And that's fine. Don't know it. Then guys like me can steal from it and you won't know what it is.
Because first I've heard the bass line, I was like, that sounds like the Jesus Lizard. You know, like, and it was, and this is years before I heard the Stranglers too, you know, and it was like, oh, okay, cool, you know. And I think that that's the exciting thing about music, if you let it be, is that, like, to be open for discovery and not necessarily come at things with an open heart, you know, not ridiculously so, not ruinously empathetic, but just like come at things with an open heart that you can find, you know, it took me working at a record store to be like, oh man, Hank Williams Sr. rules. This is really good. Miles Davis is amazing. You know, like finding out for yourself that there's other things in the birthday party. Not that the birthday party isn't great. Don't get me wrong, but and then you can, you can like look at what these artists do and like, you know, what you like about it and it expands your palette. It gives you a bigger crayon box. It's not like an 8 crayon box anymore. You have like
a large box. But let it be said too that I think there's some, it's not good to be too eclectic, especially with
a band.
You don't want to just regurgitate all your influences. No, you have to strip it down and focus it.
Yeah. We've all seen the local band where every song sounds like a different band on the radio or something. Like, what are you doing? Like, this is weird. You know, you're effective at this soulless copying, but who is this for?
Sometimes deliberately placing limitations can be emancipating because the hardest thing in the world is to start the blank page, the empty whatever page. So if you say, okay, I'm not going to do this, we're not going to do that, it forces you to focus your ideas, and I'm all for that.
Well, I always find there's an immediacy to everything you're doing, even the stuff that's more pensive or you know, reserved, like there's still an immediacy to it. And I find that very attractive in music. I'm thinking about like the Dennis and Kimball Trio stuff, which by the way, since we talked last, poor Jim, man. Like,
I know. I had no idea.
We played a show with him, like 6-7 months before that too.
Is that right?
Yeah. And he was great. He was in fine form. It's Jim Kimball. It sounded great.
Yeah. It's just one of those classic regrets where I had been meaning to talk to him, been meaning to reach out and kept putting it off. And then I hear that and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. That's just, it's tough, but but that's it. You know, all the DK3, the Dennis and Kimball Trio stuff, that's how I found out about Ornette Coleman, you know, like that you did that Ornette Coleman cover. I was like, oh wow. Yeah. Who's that?
Yeah. It led to good things. That was a nice, that was the perfect side project for me at the time. Of course, that was the 90s. And in the 90s, independent record sales were big. Mm-hmm. Like bands, like that scene was big. Record stores were everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Even a band like Dennis and Kimball Trio, we sold enough records that we could go on tour and come back with profit. You know, not much. But profit, and those albums, we could go in the studio. We didn't mess around. We'd record and mix at that album, like the first one, I think, in like 3 days. I mean, all the way, the whole thing, like done.
Yeah.
In 3 days, 4 days maybe. And so when you do that, you keep your overhead down, et cetera, et cetera. But there was just so much interest in things then that like that was the perfect side project. It was so different from what I typically did.
Yeah.
And people responded to it. We even, I get a phone call one day from the management of Morphine and like, they want you to tour with them.
Yeah.
You get a whole tour opening for Morphine. There's just me and Jim, two little guys with not much gear on stage in front of, you know, 1500 people or whatever.
And both bands very idiosyncratic. You know, both bands very much doing their own thing, but not the same thing necessarily.
Not at all. I really came in. There's another guy who was gone. That was heartbreaking to me. Yeah. Mark Sandman was one of the nicest guys I had ever met in music. He really was. We became good friends. He used to call me up out of the blue just to chat.
It never seems like it's the a-holes that die early, is it? It's,
oh, no.
It's always annoying. The sweethearts. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I think that, I mean, those records are, again, nowadays, like, you know, if a band that's not like a, you know, super well-known commodity sells 500 records, it's a miracle. You know, that's a...
And there were bigger, it seems like, movements kind of came and went like that. When we were doing that stuff, the Dennis and Kimball stuff, there was that whole subculture of this lounge thing had kind of come along.
Yeah.
And so you had Combustible Edison had Pizzicato 5.
Oh, yeah.
And we were in Chicago. So Chicago, in addition, we also kind of got in the back door of, there was that serious kind of improv scene. You had Chicago, you had Jim O'Rourke and Ken Vandermark. Yeah, they played on our records.
Yeah.
So we were able to kind of navigate between the serious guy, you know, world, and then the not so serious kind of, hey, the latest thing, lounge kind of thing. And we kind of navigated between those and had fun doing it and played shows and et cetera. I kind of miss that.
Remember that swing revival that happened? That was like huge for a while.
Right on the heels, and then that, the swing dancing.
I was like, huh? Okay, well, sure. Well, I mean, people seem like they're having fun. I mean, what?
Yeah, I wasn't a participant in that. I kind of observed it a couple times, and fine, people are doing social dancing.
Good for them.
I mean, look at the evolution of dancing. Like for years, like in my parents' generation, swing, that was there. Swing, World War II. You know, people came. My dad came home from World War II, met my mom at a dance, and that was it. People danced together. And then starting with rock and roll, suddenly everyone's doing their own thing and expressing themselves and dancing by themselves and with their Nehru jackets and their beads and all that. And then it devolved even further and further and further. And so for them, swing, it was finally people to dance together again.
Yeah. Interesting point.
You started seeing line dancing. You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of like paintings you see of like the old courtly dances in the courts of Europe, where you had Mozart and things, where everyone learned the steps.
And they're all doing the movements together. And
you learned the steps, and you didn't get out there until you did. And to me, line dancing was like a return to that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if anyone's like done like a serious study on that or anything.
I hope not.
Those lines. I mean, it almost might ruin it, right?
That's fine.
Don't do it.
I just said that's what I said.
We'll leave it be. We can cut that part out. Yeah. I think it's interesting because you see different elements of you know, your creativity as a player and as an artist coming through in these different bands, and I think it's all worth exploring because. Like I get kind of surprised with a Johnny Ramone type. I mean, I love the Ramones. They're one of my favorite bands, right? But like his thing of just, I'm just going to do this. In fact, I'm not going to practice so I don't get any better. I'm like, okay, well, I mean, that's taking it a bit much.
I'm deliberately blocking out.
We're going to keep it as dumb as possible, which, okay. I mean, it's an aesthetic, sure. It worked fine for them, but it's also, it seems like a bit extreme.
And that's the perfect example, but there's others too, weren't there? I mean,
yeah.
Motorhead, and I love them too.
Same, yeah.
The list of things that you just don't do if you're going to be in Motorhead must be huge. AC/DC, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Every record, it was like a pizza, right? Where every piece was the same.
Right.
But just different sizes.
But who doesn't like pizza? I mean,
twice. But every piece, every song was just a different slice of the pizza.
Yeah. Like, I would consider Malcolm Young one of my most influential guitar players. But, you know, it's like, but I don't just do that. Also like so much of that band was carried in his, like, right hand. You know? Much of what we love about that band.
So I get that. They had an aesthetic, they distilled it, and they just kept selling it.
This is the thing. This is the thing we do.
I think there's something to be said. I think it's okay to evolve.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to let go of things and bring new things in a little at a time. I think it's okay to maybe then you can bring it back. You can return to it. You can bring things back, almost like in a big story, like we mentioned earlier, where something foreshadows something that shows up later. And just when you forget, you're like, wait a minute, that's, we saw that an hour ago and now it's back. Well, this is like, hey, 10 years later, they brought that thing back. I don't know. We got all the answers, Conan.
I think we're really sorting it out tonight. Yeah, it's. I didn't expect it, but here we are.
I hope everyone pays attention to this because you know we've got it figured out.
Well, it is interesting too because I feel like there's, especially amongst younger bands, there's become an interest in a certain strain of psychedelic music and psychedelia that's, you know, not always to my taste, but I appreciate the idea of pushing the form a little bit. I'm glad people are buying these Pink Floyd records. Good. You know, it's not like those guys are hurting for money, but you know, they're, if you take the right kind of influence with, if you can listen to like something like an Echoes and like be like, wow, I never thought about that is what a song could be, that they, you know, they have this 12-minute passage that kind of just wanders off the reservation and then like it comes back and like you don't need to necessarily do that. But if you think about it in terms of like compositional structure or things you can do with a song or take an audience or listener, I mean, that can be exciting. And then,
yeah, I'm glad it's funny. I hadn't really noticed so much of a psychedelic influence. Like last year and some of the year before with the Jesus Lizard, when we toured, as much as possible, we asked promoters to find young local bands to be the opener. That were the young, the better, and they would give us different options. And we'd listen to them and pick out the ones we, just based on a couple songs, we'd pick ones we liked. Mm-hmm. And for better or worse, they got the slot. And so I would sometimes watch them. You know, you're bored, you go up backstage. I'm not going to watch their whole set, but I'm going to watch a few songs.
Yeah, get a sample, I'm sure.
I think as much as anything, well, with new bands, the one influence that I see that I'm glad to see, is the Velvet Underground. They never go away. Yeah. They never go away. And they keep coming back in different forms. And I'm always glad. Nothing I do sounds anything like them, but I always liked them. And I always, whether that shows up, whether it shows up in the Pixies or it shows up in numerous other bands, sort of a stripped down, raw, rough sort of aesthetic, but with poetry on top and with this weird, presented in a way where we don't care if you like it, that kind of attitude too, where we're not trying to be showbiz, we're making an artistic statement and you can take it or leave it because we don't care. And I kind of like that too. I also think that contemporary music has always been and will always be influenced by the gear of its day, that's around at its time.
Yeah.
Whether in the old days when, you know, Scotty Moore had he had the best amplifier in town, didn't he? It had built-in echo effects and all this. And so there was that. And then the 60s psychedelic era. Something I've seen more and more now, and this is verified by people I know in the musical instrument business, guys who make and sell amps and guitars, like, and again and again, everywhere I went, I would look at bands, even now when I go out around here, Nashville, the trend now for guitar players, young ones, is small amps and big pedal boards, lots of effects, and the smaller amps, maybe not even an amp, maybe even a modeler.
Going to the PA or something. Sure. Yeah.
Sound systems have gotten better. They're you know. I mean,
which that used to be, that used to carry such a stigma of just like, well, what are you doing? Okay, whatever. Go home and play their video games, you know. But that's gone. They don't care about that.
Oh, no. And perhaps maybe in a way that's time, I still like amplifiers.
I think the character of an amplifier can, especially amongst, you know, not uber quiet music, especially, I think it can define a sound more strictly, which can be to the benefit of the artist and the band, rather than having just you have every possible sound, but it's like the same thing every time. Like the chaos factor, not that it's chaos necessarily, but the uncertainty, the fact that even when they build them together by machines, every amp is going to be a little bit different, has a little bit different sound. We've all heard that one amp. It's like, well, I don't know what's up with this 68 Bassman, but it's amazing compared to this other 68 Bassman was only okay. You know,
and I think there's something also to be said, once again, having those built-in limitations.
Right.
Forces you to be resourceful and come up with things just with your hands and with this instrument itself, that it wouldn't if you had, say, a modeler that can give you every amp in effect ever invented.
Give me Brian May.
You can go with sounds. You can have sounds based on hit songs.
Sure.
They're in there. They're in that box.
But that's like analysis paralysis. That's where that lies. We're just like, okay, there's so many options. And then also, to a certain degree, you're also just playing in a walled garden too. Like, sometimes it's kind of, I'm going to do all the wrong things and see how it sounds. Okay, yeah. It sounds terrible. Or maybe it sounds cool.
Hear,
I don't know.
I don't want to hear a different sound on every song.
No, don't.
Or different sound, different sounds in every part of every song.
Yeah,
switching to a different sound and then every song is different. I don't want to hear that either.
Yeah, that's exhausting in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. So so that's a trend I think I've seen in bands over the past few years. And it's verified whenever I talk to people I know who work at guitar companies or amp companies or work at big music stores in New York City or here, whatever. They're like, yeah, I can't sell those. Like, I've got some, maybe some, I don't need to sell them yet, but the day's going to come when I've got some big stuff. It's like you feel like a dinosaur sometimes.
Right.
Yeah. And I understand when I see other people, and I kind of always thought this way. There were some guys, they put too much into their gear.
Mm-hmm.
Like their gear became part of their identity.
Yeah.
And rather than the music.
So something you're real busy with that instead of writing songs. It's like, well, I can.
Yeah. Exactly. When they've got serial numbers memorized.
Yeah. Great. They okay.
Gears and makes and models memorized. And like, dude, shouldn't you be writing a song? Shouldn't you be rewriting? If I were you, I'd be rewriting that last song because it needs it.
Maybe use some revision. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not into the fetishism. The fetishism.
Because that's the other side of it, right? Which is the and the gear doesn't make the player, any more than the player makes the gear. But it's what you do with it with everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I still go out with 4x12s, tube heads and 4x12s, and that's what I like. You know, is it stupid? Well, man, sometimes I feel it in my back. It's like, how smart is it to be doing this,
Yeah.
But that's what I like.
I've had two hernias. So I watch it, or I let other people, pay other people to do it now.
That was my gift to myself at 40, is I'll let other people help with this.
Absolutely.
but I think that it's as far as driving the creativity and modern, there's just like kind of a, it's interesting because there is an aspect of smorgasbord where it's like, how did you arrive at this? It's almost like solving a puzzle, like a band like Tropical Fuckstorm. I love them. I think they're amazing. I think they're somehow unique while also being, I can tell you all the records that they listen to, but what comes out is uniquely them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some artists and bands chase that entire life and they never get there.
Right.
And they're just, it just seems to happen very naturally for them. But I mean, I say that they also, they've all been playing for many years, been in other bands, they've had a whole journey that they went on. Nothing comes out of, burst forth from the head of Zeus fully formed or anything. But I think about, that's something that's important to me. And then there's some bands I see that it's like, this again, huh? We're doing this? All right. Mm-hmm. And they seem to be happy. The audience seems to be happy with it. I'm like, okay, well, maybe this is a me problem. I don't know.
It seems like I get used to being disappointed. Something new comes along and I'm into it.
Yeah.
I'm into it, even to the point where this is the worst thing ever, right? Isn't it when you find something new you like, you tell people about it. You tell people that you like them. You like this new thing. Then the new thing comes along and it's got this new, they have a new thing going and it's not good.
Yeah.
And now you've gone around trumpeting the virtues of this thing and it's awful now.
Now it's something totally different that's altogether less satisfying for you.
Yeah. And, people, they're got their pitchforks out and torches and they're like, you said they were good. And
How dare you? Yeah. Yeah, no names mentioned, but I've known a few of those bands.
That's the worst thing in the world. That is worse than cancer. When that,
where it's like, what are you doing?
Why are you telling us lies? Artistic lies.
False prophet. Yeah, exactly. Get an old school Frankenstein on it. Yeah. No, but I mean, it's cool though. Well, certainly I appreciated that when Jesus Lizard was, you're not trying to get bands that emulate some aspect of what the Jesus Lizard does. You're trying to get bands that are doing something cool, doing something interesting.
Yeah.
And thank goodness, because sometimes it's just like, all right, they're trying to get like just like the safest pablum possible for the masses. Like, what are we doing here? And I think that the distinction when there's a band that cares about that kind of thing versus one that's just going to kind of, whatever, we don't care, you know, go with the flow. And I feel like in the era of this balkanization of taste and discovery, it's all the more important that, I still remember, when I saw Le Butcherettes, right? Who I don't know what the hell they're even doing now. But I saw them with Melvins. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this band's great. Like, what's the deal with this band? I was like, oh, it turns out, Jerry, she's from Mexico. She's been doing this for years. I just didn't know anything about it. Yeah. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. I got all the records and everything. And I would never have found it if they hadn't just, taken her and taken the band out and just provided that avenue of discovery. And I think that that's all the more important in the era of the algorithm. You know what I mean? Where it's like,
yes.
Very little gets let in that isn't, the corporate approved, oh, we're doing this now. Well, this F you is my response to that. Always.
Yeah, it seems honestly, like up until recently, I figured it was okay. Like the rock scene was okay. You can put a new thing together and advertise and just get out there, keep doing it, and it will find its audience. And then in the last few years, really, only in the last couple of years, I thought, but it seems harder. It really does seem harder than ever. Like for just people who are just starting now, I feel like, sure, I can help you maybe with the mechanics of guitar playing. I can maybe
write that piece of it.
Yeah. Teach you maybe a little bit about how to maybe approach a composition, like music, strictly musical type things. But as far as like getting noticed and getting gigs, I don't even... like half the places are gone. Like the small to mid-sized sort of undergroundish kind of place where you could hang out, the kind of place where you liked to, if you weren't playing there, you'd be hanging out there too, because it had a cool vibe. And people who liked that kind of thing went there. Those places have a lot of them have disappeared. It's so expensive. I realize everything is more expensive. But now there are costs that never used to factor in especially when I was young. I don't remember. Okay, I met the guys in the Jesus Lizard when we all lived in Austin, Texas in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Okay, then we all moved to Chicago and we were in the Chicago for the 90s all the way through. And then around 99, we split the first time. Everybody went split up. I came to Nashville, et cetera. But that entire time, I don't think I ever paid to park anywhere. You know what I mean?
Oh, just yes. That, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Just that alone.
The overhead of just existing, right? Let alone engaging with something.
A practice space.
Yeah, yeah.
Or sharing one with someone. I mean, I'm lucky. I have one of the last ones left. And it's funny, when the guys from Tomahawk come here to rehearse, smaller rehearsals, we'll go to the pro place later. We had the place I'm in now, where I've been for about 5 years, I got back in. We had our first rehearsals there 25 years ago, this cinder block building with our three different rooms and a bathroom on the end. And when those guys get here, especially Mike, he won't remember. I'm going to say, do you remember being here?
Yeah.
Like 20, literally 25 years ago for two nights. But anyway, it's one of the only ones left.
It's still there. It's still the same.
It's still there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that can happen. Like, I remember there's a place we played in Boston last year called O'Brien's that it was like last time I played Boston in Replicator, it was there. And I walked in and it was exactly the same. And it was like time travel. And I was like, I can't, like, that's where gear goes. That's where the state, like, it was exactly the same. But that's so rare. Yeah, and think so about rare. Like Slim's in San Francisco. That's gone. Bottom of the Hill's gone to the end of the year for San Francisco.
Lounge Jack's gone, Chicago. There's a place called The End here in Nashville that's still there, but barely.
Everyone's just holding on if they're even around.
Barely. They're barely hanging on.
So what do we do when they're all gone? I mean, it's just
Then it's just podcasts.
Yeah, let's say I got that covered. But what do you go on TikTok? I mean, come on, what are we doing here? You know,
but that's part of the problem, though, is that also what drove us to go out in the first, okay, we're young, you want to go out and socialize, that's part of it, sure. It was less expensive. You could park on the street for free, you could park wherever for free, so there was that. But there was less options as far as entertainment. Now, if you've got cable or satellite, man, you can see anything you want.
You're competing with Netflix, Hulu, yeah. Criterion Channel. Yeah, I mean, like,
YouTube, absolutely. And so you've got, on top of everything else, you've got that. So staying, like, if you were, say, 26, 27, hanging out with your friends, and somebody said, what'd you do last night? You said, I stayed home and watched TV. They go, you're lame. You're lame, corporate suck ass. Whereas now there's options are so good. They say, oh, really? What'd you watch? Oh, cool. I like that too. Yeah.
1979 Gang of Four live show. Really? Can you send it to me?
So there's more competition for just your attention span.
Yeah. Beyond just, the other things that are happening that night is competing with all of media throughout all of time, ostensibly, right?
If it doesn't show up on your screen or on your phone, it doesn't seem real to younger people. I've worked in a library and I watch, or even when I just walk around now, you take something back to the store, the employees are just sitting there looking at their phones.
Just scrolling away.
God, what was it? A few years ago, there was a terrorist bombing in London, and they showed they were evacuating people, and half the people had their phones out and were taking pictures of selfies of themselves being evacuated from a terrorist bombing. What the fuck is going on?
Even Devo couldn't have predicted that,
No, they predicted a lot. I was just thinking about them. I was just thinking about them the other night because I read that documentary was really good.
Yeah.
I saw them in Detroit in about 79, and they were so good on so many levels.
Yeah.
And they were really, they would mock the audience. They were making fun of them. Look at me. Mark Mothersbaugh rolling around on the floor, he had this box that was, I don't know what it was, but it was just making noises and spark. Yeah. And he's like, hey, look at me, Detroit Ted Nugent. Look at me. I'm Van Halen.
Great. Just the attitude, everything, and it's I even asked him, I was like, hey, so, how's it feel to be right about everything? And they're like, terrible.
Yeah.
It feels terrible.
Yeah, they're like, we don't want to be right. I want to be wrong.
Yeah, we didn't do it. It was far worse than we ever could have expected, which is saying a lot.
Yeah. I remember, decades ago, I'm like, we're very worried men. We're worried about the future. They were right.
Yeah, they were 100% right. Yeah, it's a bleak times. but that's also for me and for someone that likes, because there's two things with art. Art can be comfort or it can be transgressive, right? It could be something where it pushes you out of your comfort zone and makes you uncomfortable about certain things, or it could be that's a warm, cuddly blanket that, and there's a time and there's a place for both.
Sure.
And I can totally see when, the world's on fire. And there's all this woe and misery and it seems like all is wrong in the world, that you're not looking to be challenged. You're not looking to have your views expanded. I understand it. It's not my thing necessarily.
Right.
So that's when I sort of think about the pop world. And every once in a while, I'll just sort of put a toe in, be like, oh, let's see what this is. And it's a different universe. Now than it ever was before. And I feel like there's this auto-tuned breathiness that I'm like, wow, what is especially with no frame of reference coming into it and I don't listen to that stuff. And that's fine. More power to those that do, but it just doesn't, it's completely divorced from the reality of what I think of as music. And I understand everyone's kind of exists in their own pocket universes now. That's just the way the culture has evolved. And I suppose there should be some comfort to that. But I just if you think this is edgy, I'm sorry for you. I mean, Jesus.
I had a moment like that just the other night. My wife and I, we went out to eat at a barbecue place. Place Jack's Barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Charlotte Avenue. Great place. I try not to eat so much red meat. I try to like maybe once a week, twice a week tops.
Make it count and make it.
If I'm
going to
do that, I'll go there. Yeah,
yeah, I'm the same way. But, man.
They were the music that they were playing. They tend to vary it, either maybe old school R&B or country. And so we happened to get there, and it wasn't old country. It was like contemporary popular country, and it was just the worst. One song after another in the same key with the same chord changes and the same lyric. AI probably did write it all. It was, you're going to hear about have another cup of Joe, and then you're going to hear about his truck.
Yeah.
And then you're going to hear about finding Jesus.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's got to be in there. Yeah.
What country, what happened? What it was about drinking and brawling and getting divorced and stuff like that. Where did
Johnny
that go?
Paycheck and all that, you know,
where did that go? It's just sad. It's sad to me.
So somebody took it, and I promise we'll get off this topic, but some internet wit took a couple of these songs. I don't know. They all run together for me, but they overlaid them on top of each other. And it was just like you said, like at this moment, like they first of all, they sounded like they were the same song.
The same BPM,
the same like cadences, the same.
If it goes to a minor chord, it's not for long. It goes to the minor of the song, and then it comes back to the major key for the chorus. Where, well, that's okay because I'm still going.
Same subject matter. In some cases, like two of the verses, like it was just a small change of words as someone did like a global search and replace on a document or something. Like it was. Like in a just world, it would have been the ruination of both of those artists' career. But of course, that you know is something for a too sassy person such as myself to look at and laugh at.
Well, it's baffling too, and it's funny to me where a hit country song, it'll have a drum machine part, and then an acoustic guitar that's sampled from a Nine Inch Nails album,
right?
You know, like Lil Nas X, right? It was a Nine Inch Nails guitar sample. And that's in the country charts.
Yeah.
Like Hank Williams, he's not rolling in his grave. He's spinning like on a rotisserie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You could put him up to a generator. You could get some power out of him. Yeah. No, and it's – and look, I'm definitely saying if you were to sit around and try to cater your taste, cater music to my sensibility, everyone would go broke, right? I understand. But
yeah, I get it.
It's also, man, what people have come to settle for, it's a bummer. It's a bummer. And I feel like people in general should ask for more from their culture, from their art, from their government, et cetera, et cetera. But I think there's like this soft complicity of just it's more. That's content. That's the nefariousness of content. It's just more. Oh, don't worry. There's a next thing coming up. Okay. Yeah. Well, the next thing's probably equally horrible and pablum as well. But not always the case. One tries to be the rock in the river, if you will. But it's
eventually the water wears you smooth too,
brother. You ain't kidding. Yeah, I mean, look at this show, right? When people are starting up new shows, I'm in the position of them is all they'll ask me for advice. I'm like, well, first of all, like I don't, whatever. All the things I did, don't do that because it won't work for you anymore. Because I've been doing this for so long at this point that I have this weird niche, right? And all the rules are different.
I wanted to ask about that. So this is episode, did you say 453?
Yeah, and we're...
How many years is that?
12 years in April.
That's
so
great.
Which in podcast years is like the start of the pre-Cambian era, you know?
Yeah.
Like I was going to Fry's Electronics, everybody, and buying like, hardware solutions for all this stuff. And but again, and then when I do give them advice on this kind of thing, like when they ask, it's like, well, you're not going to hear this, but like make sure you have something to say first before you worry about the equipment, before you worry about your logos, for your worry about your sponsors, like sponsors. Make sure you have something to say before you worry about that.
Yeah, have a point of view. Develop a point of view.
Have a point of view, and whatever you think it is that makes you you, and makes what you're doing unique and interesting. Lean into that and do that as hard as you can. Because even if you're wrong, it's better to try with something, be wrong about it and have to course correct than just go along with the flow and make it sound like everything else.
There you go. I'm with you on that.
And nobody wants to hear it. They just want to be like, well, how do I get sponsors? I'm like, man, I don't even have sponsors. I do the Fugazi model. Come on, what are you doing here?
I want to influence people. I want to be on TikTok.
It's a bummer. And we're trying not to be old man yells at cloud about it, but you know, it's hard. It can be demoralizing sometimes. But so that said, the other side of it is that it's great to see people trying out the medium because the barrier of entry is lower now than it ever was. You don't have to go to a Fry's Electronics or whatever. You can just go. And I see people that, you know, years ago, they never would have been able to just put their show up on the internet immediately and be seen like around the world. You know, it's amazing. It's a wonderful.
The one thing, yeah, the good thing that I think that technology was supposed to do was make things easier for you in a way.
That's
and in a way, it had, right? I mean, I give lessons online still sometimes. And if there is a trend there that I've seen over the past 10 years is, more people who learn how to play an instrument, especially guitar, and have home studios where they write and have an interface with their laptop. And instead of going out and buying a board and all that, no, just get the interface and maybe a controller of some kind and then use your laptop. People with home studios like that, way more than people who, like when I was a kid, you took lessons and bought stuff because you wanted to be in a band and play in front of and play live.
Yeah, you want to play a show.
Even when you knew you weren't ready, you knew it didn't sound great, you knew, et cetera, et cetera. You did it anyway. And you learned on the job. You kind of worked the bugs out, what works, what doesn't, what kind of people do I like to be with, et cetera. So you find all those things out. Whereas a home studio thing, sure, maybe you get better at your craft. You can write multi-level compositions and listen to them and study them like that. So I don't know. But I always thought of, especially in rock music, as being it's as much a social event as anything. It's a social thing. And that means you got to put something together. To me, it used to be, I don't know if we've talked about this before, maybe we have, but the art versus entertainment thing.
We have, but I think it's an evergreen topic.
Yeah. you can't, to me, they don't have to be mutually exclusive, right? And they're both there. Like you can have all the artistic integrity you want and have all the best intentions, but if you're not connecting with people, what's your point? You know, you can stay home and do that. If you're not connecting and maybe making the light bulb go off over someone else's head, then to me, the medium of rock music, why really are you doing? You can stay home and paint if that's all you want to do. On the other hand, I'm not necessarily up there to make sure everybody has a rock and roll good time.
Right. That's the other side of it.
I'm not going to advertise the drink specials and I'm not going to say, hey, come back Friday night, so-and-so is going to be here. And, I'm not going to do that either. But at the same time, if you're not in a vacuum, you're not, I don't know, you've got a point you want to make and you've got some sort of a statement you want to make. But at the same time, you're aware that if people don't just first plain old enjoy it, they're not going to come back to it. I've always thought, a successful band, it's like running a successful restaurant. In a successful restaurant, your songs and the recipes, that's the same thing. You've got to have good recipes, things that you know people will like that aren't too terribly different from what they already like.
Right. That's some frame of reference, sure.
Yeah. Right? But different enough that you can slowly pull them over to your way of doing things and become known for doing a different angle of these classic tried and true recipes. Mm-hmm. To me, I thought that it was that way. And
like the ambience and the cool is great, but if the food is terrible, who cares?
Yeah. And you can have the greatest, equipment in the world. You can have the latest model kitchen with all the latest stuff. But if those recipes aren't right and the way you present them aren't right and all that, no one's going to come back. And to me, the secret of any successful business, my young man, is return customers, right? They got to come back. I used to think sometimes that with the Jesus lizard, this is going to sound funny, but hear me out. I thought we were too consistently good. We had, and that with David Yao's occasional drunken foray, the nights where he was just out of his mind and couldn't remember the songs and would hit the floor and all that, that kind of helped reset the things where people would say, well, they're not that always that consistent. I saw him the other night and he was unconscious.
Yeah. You
know? So there's that too. You don't want it to be too good. People get bored with you.
Because then the efficiency becomes commonplace. Right?
Yeah.
and that's it's a great problem to have, by the way. But I mean, God, I saw you guys once, and I think I've told this story one of the times you were on, but like, I think it was Bottom of the Hill, and David was like crowd surfed around during the song, and then he ended up at the merch table, got dumped into the t-shirt box, did half the song from the t-shirt box, got pulled out of the t-shirt box, and I was like, this is great. Yeah. And whole time you guys were just, you know, doing the song, just going away. And for me, I'm like, this is badass. But it's also like, it's the performance. Were the vocals as dead on as they were in the record? Of course they weren't. He was getting dumped in the t-shirt box. How do you think it sounded? But like, it still was.
It was entertaining.
It was an entertainment.
There was
right?
an element of chance to it that made it fun and exciting. Yes.
Absolutely.
I thought that there were times with David when you walked that fine line where he sort of made a mockery of the whole idea of professionalism. On the one hand, we were a professional rock band. We got up there, we played songs. We played them right. We played them well. We showed up on time. We did our, you know what I mean? We were professional in that sense. But then you've got a singer who, I mean, you just look at him and you know he's not right.
It's a wild card. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, there's never.
That's exactly what it was. And
you're like, well, what do we get tonight?
That was, you know, what helped make that band. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I thought that it was just funny to me. I mean, people buy book magazines. Like, isn't there one called Gig Magazine?
Right.
Where it has all these tips on professionalism.
Yeah.
All the, you know, do's and don'ts of the local music scene. And then you would look at him and it's just like wrong.
He's doing the exact opposite of everything in that article. Right.
And there's a huge crowd.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, everything's going right.
But then I've also seen people do attempt to do a David Yao or Iggy Pop thing, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
And it's terrible. No, don't do. Come on, man. What are we doing? Like, this is not hitting how you think you are.
I have too, where they think they're being confrontational. And they're being transgressive and all those things.
You're just making it awkward, man. Don't do it.
No.
Which isn't to say that, you know, that's the case all the time. I mean, it's just that what people don't want to hear is that, like, the things that they associate with bands that they love and, you know, live acts that they love, they become orthodox or like, no, it's that way because that's what they do and they found the path to doing it. But the answer isn't do those things. The answer is find the things that you do very well and do those things as well as you can and lean into that.
Right. If you're going to do the thing kind of mocking or whatever, find what is it, the parts of things that I don't know, annoy you about the whole thing, and you know, and then magnify it and distort it and
etc. Well, because another rock and roll wild man, Shannon Selberg, right? He had a totally different approach to it than David did.
Yeah.
That was another one. I was like, what's he going to be up to? I don't know. You know, he's got mouse traps on his ears and like.
Gibby Haynes.
Gibby Haynes, another one, yeah.
I mean, those are, and then it wasn't, well, with guys like that, it wasn't really an act. It was like they were the kind of people. I mean, if you hung out with those guys, crazy shit was going to happen sooner or later, no matter where you were, in public, on stage, whatever.
That's just natural chaos engines, if you will.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is good. You need someone like that to kind of like shake you out of the everyday. I feel like, you know.
Yeah.
Not necessarily as a bandmate always, but depending on the person.
Downside, sure. It has a downside where it's kind of when you just don't.
We're getting pretty far off base here. So tell me about the Jesus stuff. You know, there's a lot of people that were very sad to see, myself included, the dates got canceled. you know, I want to respect the privacy of the band and whatnot. But I mean, is it something where, is that it? You know, is it like a, there's no more, or is it just a, like, we're going to kind of wait this out and see, like, what's the situation, Dwayne?
I never really know. I honestly can't say that that's it, because I truly don't know. There's been times in the past, I didn't think we were going to get back together the first time, 2009.
Which I was at that one. That was great.
Yeah, but we went around the world. I didn't think that would ever happen. And then we started chipping away and playing little one-offs and things in the teens. And we had talked about making an album back then in 2009, but it just never quite, we couldn't quite get everybody going the same direction. But then that happened. Yeah. And I didn't really think that was ever going to happen. And finally that happened. And then we toured. We had to cut it short. It was a drag. But so I don't know. Nothing's going to happen this year with the Jesus Lizard. I think I can predict that with a certain degree of certainty. Certain degree of certainty. Isn't that colorful?
it's like known unknowns. Remember Rumsfeld? Unknown knowns and known unknowns. Yeah.
As for down the line, I honestly don't know. Let's put it this way. It is not 100% officially done.
Right.
It's not like last I heard, there was still the door was still cracked open a little bit.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that's what I think people are very interested in knowing is that more than anything. They may phrase it a different way.
Sure.
And I think largely because what I saw when that happened was, you know, a bunch of outpouring of genuine concern. Of course, it's going to be the answer, sure. Right? But then, you know, when there's no news of any kind, like, well, is that it? You know, like, what's happening? Like, you know, how do we know? So I think that'll be of comfort to people, you know.
Oh, good. Okay.
And go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry. No, and with Tomahawk 2, these shows coming up, I'm so excited.
I'm psyched.
And us and the Melvins, I mean, what a rock show. Man, that's a fucking rock show in the summer. Are you kidding? That's going to be great. And I didn't foresee this coming either. Yeah.
I think I even messaged you when Tonica Mobility came out. Like, hey, you want to come on the show about it? And like, you know, whatever. It didn't, you know, sometimes stuff pans out. Sometimes it doesn't. Right.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, yeah. Because I remember when that record came out. I was like, I even placed it. I do these year-end shows where I put my best records, the records I like the best that year, and like make a playlist on it, do a whole thing. It's a real pain in the ass, actually, to put together. But do a show on it. And you placed it fairly high in on that playlist. And I had people tell me, I didn't know they put out a new record.
I heard that a lot, too. And that annoyed me endlessly.
It's like, well, I guess I'm doing the God's work then. Because it's
Thank you.
Because that's why I do it.
I thought we're a super group.
Yeah, you're a super group. You don't know? Yeah.
You're supposed to just worship everything that comes down the line.
Didn't check your app updates on Super Grouper? Yeah.
I know, and I think that with that group, especially the composition, things have become more refined. It's had time to evolve, and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. I don't want to go on and on about it, but anyway, people can come see us live, and you know, can see for themselves.
Yeah, and I'm excited. Well, I mean, like I said, you know, I haven't seen you guys play apparently since George W. Bush was president. So
it's amazing to me. Yeah, no, we came out. It was 9/11 when we went on our first tour. Our first album came out right after 9/11.
That doesn't even seem possible, but yeah,
I know. And so I'm so lucky. I get to be in these bands, and then if it turns out to just these are just victory laps, you know, late career, get to go around and enjoy. Well, then good. I will take it for, you know, I don't know what to expect. I don't have any expectations for future things, though the door is open.
Yeah.
But I feel so lucky. I mean, I'm able to do it, you know. I'm 67 years old, but this is to me, maybe if you stay in shape somewhat and keep mentally alert and physically try not to, you know, watch what you eat, don't drink too much, lay off the drugs and the smokes, and that'll kill you before the booze will, but the booze will too. That maybe you can do this. You can keep doing this. And, you know, people, I think in a way, you know, you look at someone like Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, even Iggy Pop, and people look at them like they're still doing it in their 70s and even 80. It's different for their world, especially for like the Stones, where, come on, I mean,
you get some new blood pumped in from like a 12-year-old boy or something.
Right? Like, yeah, when's the last time Keith Richards moved an amplifier? I mean, I don't think he picked up a guitar case in 40 years, let alone, hey, we need to move these amps over here. Or, you know, or carried their own suitcase to their room. Yeah, none of that. Come on.
But they outlived all the Ramones, you know, the original four.
And I kind of like what Iggy said. You know, people were talking to him about it. And he still sounds great. I think I saw him just a year or so ago.
Yeah.
At a festival that the Jesus Lizard played somewhere overseas, I think. And he had a different band. It wasn't the Stooges, you know, the new Stooges anymore. It was maybe Nick Zinner and somebody else.
But the drummer plays in, he's great. The Death from Detroit, the son of one of the people.
Is that
his
right?
Band, that's the guy that's drummer. That guy's rad. I'm completely blanking on his name. I know him. That's terrible, but he's a great drummer. He's really
Cool. That makes sense.
Ruff Francis is the name of the band.
But
like younger cats. Okay.
He still sounded great. And
he put out. Did you hear that post pop depression record he did with Josh Homme like some years back?
Yeah.
Really good. I was like, this is for a late career record. You know, I mean, it's no Lulu with Lou Reed and Metallica, but
thank God.
AKA Grandpa Simpson rapping in a guitar center.
So I'm not obviously in the same zone as those guys.
Yeah.
But I still, at my age, I get to do this and I can still do it. I can still play. I can still tour. I can still keep it together. I feel fortunate. And yeah, I like Iggy said, and people were saying, you know, you're doing this, you know, I bet, you know, the money's better than it used to be. Like, yeah, well, to me, I did this for years where I made nothing. And you know what that's like.
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, where, you know, we did this, the Jesus Lizard, it was at least 3 years, almost nonstop touring, sleeping on floors, et cetera, taking turns being the guy who got up early to take the van to the shop to get fixed.
Yeah.
After being up half the nights, going without sleep for literally days at a time, living on cigarettes, coffee, and alcohol. And then, lo and behold, the album starts selling, and then you're getting royalty checks, and they've never stopped. Once I got that first one, they've never stopped. They might not be huge, but they keep going. And then the next time you come to the town, hey, there we are in the local weekly. And now we're on the front of the weekly and all that kind of thing. But to me, this is like back pay. I'm getting back pay.
No, for real. Of course. Yeah.
Pay for, you know, we get to play these big festivals and things. Yeah. Like, yeah, they're paying us a lot. I'm getting paid for work I did decades ago.
Average that out.
Average it out, and it's a middle class income.
Right, exactly. It's some a years, little more than you make at 7-Eleven.
Upper middle class, some years.
Yeah.
But, you know, So, what I get to, you know, I imagine if I go to my high school reunion and, you know, somebody looks at my total in my social security statement and
top line number. Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably the same as in some cases as guys who I knew who never left Michigan and worked at Ford's the whole time and retired with pensions and all that. But I got to do this, you know what I mean? I got to write songs and write original music, create stuff, play on music with, work on original stuff with people who are co-creators. Mm-hmm. Go out, do your thing, and it's your own time. It's your own life, et cetera. You know, it slowed down. I got to be about 55, and none of my groups were really doing anything. And I couldn't afford to do nothing. And I found it distasteful the thought of going out and hustling, like going out and hustle something up.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got a job in the library, the Nashville Public Library. And yeah. I did that, you know, for a few years. And then just like always happens, every time I ever get a job and say, that's it, it's straight life, then it starts again.
Then something, hey, you want to get together and do some stuff?
And it starts again. And then the show starts showing up. I start playing on other people's records first.
Right. That's right.
Start writing songs, and then the whole thing starts again. And now I get to do it again full time. And, you know, there I feel it. Tendonitis is real. Aches and pain, you know, that stuff. Not having quite the endurance and all that. All that stuff is real. But it's still like, well, I could go days at a time without sleep. I could do and like. So it's not that different. I feel like, well, now I feel like how normal guys felt back then.
Right. No, totally. Like it's all, totally. I do.
Totally.
Well, and absolutely. And you also have these moments that like you going out and doing those things, that is something that helps bring people out of the mediocre misery of whatever's happening in their lives. Cause art can be transgressive to people in a positive way. It builds community. It builds, people in a dreamlike state. So no wonder fascists are so quick to try to shut it down, by the way.
Yeah.
There's like, oh, it's only be entertainment. No, F that.
No, it's communion. It's all those things. It's shared values. It's all those things. It's energizing for myself as well. It totally is.
What does that say in the like all other art forms bow to music or something along those? I'm paraphrasing this, but I think about that all the time. I think not enough apparently. So I can't think of the quote, but it's something along the lines of like all other art forms bow to music for purity or something along those lines. And it's,
I don't know exactly, but think about it. If you're a writer, like someone who writes novels. You're by yourself most of the time.
It's a solo exercise. Sure.
You're like that. If you're a painter, right? If you're a painter, or a sculptor, a visual artist, you know, you're on your own all the time. So the only other thing that you ever get to work with other people as much is say sports.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
which is socially acceptable to yeah, exactly. That's right? Okay. Right. Sports are okay. But
sports, yeah. And I'm somewhat of a sports fan.
Which is fine. But the social acceptability of being a professional athlete versus a professional musician have different connotations.
It's different in your career music, yeah. Your career can go on forever if you're smart and healthy and
a professional athlete's over by the time you're 34 if you're lucky, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you've got 5-10 years tops.
Baseball again.
Then you become a wrestler.
Exactly.
Or you just go on TV.
Celebrity boxing, celebrity dating, celebrity something. No, but I think there's something to be said too, not just for doing it while you still have the ability to do it, but like to do it and do it at the level that you can do it at and kind of play to your strengths on it as well. And, you know, we've all seen people that, you know, as you mentioned, they can't quite hit the high notes anymore or, you know, they don't hit the drums as hard as they used to or whatever, this and that. And there's still ways to do it that are viable. And there are ways to do it that don't just bring joy to the player, but bring joy to the listener as well. And I think that I've always, I mean, that's like my raison d'etre. That's my love language. That's where I live in life.
Yeah.
But I think it's vital now in this era of like, you know, AI encroaching on everything and the algorithm determining what everyone is paying attention to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's repulsive and people should be mad. People should be madder, frankly.
If they, with the phone, I mean, this little thing, I mean, it's pretty handy. I mean, it's like, right? It's an encyclopedia. It's a atlas. It's a phone. It's everything in one. And sure, it's a great tool. But man, if they want, they couldn't have invented a better way of controlling people. If they wanted to control kids and younger people and keep them from rebelling and keep them from noticing how heavily stacked against them things have become. They couldn't have invented a better medium than that. And it's addictive. I actually quit social media I don't do any social media now.
Yeah, you quit Facebook and all that. I saw.
Yeah.
Good for you, by the way. Good for you.
It just got. It was garbage. Just wearing me down. On the one hand, I enjoyed. It did put me back in touch with people that I hadn't spoken to in a long time. And in my case, there was people that I went to grade school with, like literally kindergarten and grade school, like in Michigan, who they're still around. And it was nice. I mean, you can look at their profile and see what they're all about. And like, hey, cool. Oh, good. Yeah, I'll talk to you. Great. So other people, not so much. Like, oh, I see what you're into. And I'm going to avoid you.
Yeah. And we got nothing in common. Great.
So I will probably miss some of that, but I don't miss anything else. The level of hostility and ignorance and just people who can't even spell or punctuate or put together a sentence arguing. And I'd get so mad. I'd find myself arguing, hell, probably they're not even people.
I took a break a while back, and one of the reasons why is I found myself getting into these just volatile, knockdown, drag-out Facebook arguments with my dad's friends.
Oh, my God. Yes.
They were like his former union buddies that just took like a hard turn for Trump, and like I was just there just – and I was like, what am I doing?
Why am I
doing this? There's so much better uses of my time than doing this. And neither one of us are changing the other's mind here. Right? We're just yelling at each other, you know?
And you're getting tweaked. You're letting yourself get tweaked by these morons.
And I think Brave New World got it so close with Soma, but it's like, who knew that like the rage reaction would be like such a big...
the anger thing. It's like, I can't do it.
I can't be angry all the time, man. I got stuff to do.
It's hard to keep up. No, angry. I'm bad enough just driving anymore.
Yeah, I mean that'll do it. Yeah. I'll say, you gotta love Mike Watt. He has so much jargon, so many sayings.
Too much.
It's vernacular, but he calls cell phones leashes, and I was like, oh, that's good.
Leashes, not that's leeches, good. But leashes.
Leash like a dog. Cool. You know, and I was like. Okay. Oh, that's pretty good, man. That's
okay.
And then before I was like, all right, that's some real come on. But now I'm like, well, you may be onto something there, Mike Watt.
What?
what a wonderful, unique character that guy is.
Yeah.
Listen, Dwayne, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure to have you. Great conversation. I'm very excited to see Tomahawk again, apparently, since George W. Bush was president.
He would be a breath of fresh air now.
Isn't that crazy? They'd be like, please, can we bring him back? Please.
Come back. Please help us.
We thought we had it bad.
I know. I'm sorry I complained. Now I know. I have something really to complain about.
Oh, boy.
Now I know how bad things can get. Please come back.
Like, we have a cartoon villain. Running things right now. It's like at least, you know, can't. Wow. Anyway, that's either here nor there. Tomahawk out into North Melvin. So excited. Anything else you'd like to mention while we're on there? I really like the song you did on the Bunwell album. Speaking of doing guest stuff, I thought it was really cool.
I have a local group that I've put together. We're calling it, as of now, the D2 Archipelago.
Ooh.
I'm D2. The D2 Archipelago.
Nice.
Myself, so far. It's myself and Brian Kotzer on drums, who has played with me in the ensemble.
Yeah.
Played with the Silver Jews and Country Westerns and Bobby Bear Jr. He's on drums. And Matt Swanson from Lamb Chop and Dave Cloud and other things is playing bass. And we're kind of – it's kind of my – maybe a new version of the Dennison Kimball Trio. It's kind of noir, sort of jazzy, but not always. Not always. Right now it's instrumental. But I think we want to have some vocals. We want to have female vocals. I'm tired of men.
Me too. It's enough. You know what I mean? I do. Yeah.
But we're starting to play out. I think we're going to open for Kid Congo.
Awesome.
Coming up.
Yeah.
And some other things. So that's kind of, I've been working on that too. And that's kind of bubbling up.
That's exciting. That's cool, man. I hope you can see it. That's great.
Yeah.
So last thing, you've been on the show before. You know the vibe. Answer can be the same as last time. I wouldn't even know the difference because I don't remember what happened last week. But
I don't know.
Why do you do what you do?
Because, especially now, it's one of the only ways you can just get out of the boredom of everyday existence. Isn't it? Especially playing live, more so than anything else, being on stage, playing loud in front of an audience of people who are also big and loud, it's just like a heightened sense of reality, a heightened sort of hyper reality world that is unlike anything else I can do or get. And I can't get it from anything else. Nothing else is like that. And it never will be. And so I know the day will come when I'll just have to say, okay, that's enough for that kind of thing. But I'm it's not there yet. And that's why.
Dwayne Dennison, thanks so much, sir. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Conan. It's awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Till next time.
You bet.
There he goes, Mr. Dwayne Dennison. Check out Tomahawk on tour. Like I said, I'll put tour dates in the show notes, like I always do. Let's hear something off Tonic Mobility to play us out. This is Predators and Scavengers. That was Mr. Dwayne Dennison, Tomahawk, Jeez Lizard, DK3, and the new band, the D2 Archipelago. What a cool word archipelago is, by the way. I only know it from the Shellac song, but I love it as a map nerd, aspiring map nerd, we'll say. So please, check out those Tomahawk shows. I know I will. This has been Conan Transportonic Reversal. Thank you so very much for listening to it. You can find the shows usually Thursdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific, streaming live on YouTube and Twitch. Podcasted later everywhere, always free, no ads, no sponsors, no problem. ProtonicReversal.com for those archives. If you like the show and you want to get episodes sooner, though, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal achieves that goal. It helps keep the lights on this joint, and that's appreciated. Thanks, folks, for liking, subscribing on your platform of choice, sharing the episodes around. All that helps people discover the show, helps beat back those almighty algorithmic overlords. Deep, deep appreciated. Falco McCluskey coming up back on. It's been a while, actually, coming on this week. I think that might be the last episode before tour. His chance could be two, but we'll see. We'll see. But there's definitely the one. Other than that, Code Neutron, Secret Friends on tour with Red Cross. Predominantly in the south, southwest, south, and southeast. 50,000 watts of power. Ask about the shows. NeutronFriends.bandcamp.com for all those dates, song kick, bands in town, all that stuff. And let's see, anything else to say right now? I might have something cool to announce for the 12th anniversary, which would be this in a month. We'll see. See if I can get my act together. Into electricity. How's that for a hook? Anyway, stay safe out there. Can you hear me now? And check you later.
Out on Route 128, it's dark and lonely. I got my radio on. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Welcome to my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. But there is no special girl! It's the... It's the end of radio! The last announcer plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? We'll be right back.
Is it really broadcasting if there's no one there to receive? It's the end of radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day, radio. Can you hear?